Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Yeah, you know, you play a game like that 9 or 10 times, you're going to win a hockey game. We played a hell of a game. We battled hard. They score, we come back and score. They score, we come back again with the Zucker with the fifth. Just the composure to, you know, not just get the puck out in the neutral zone near the end, kill the clock. You know, taking a shot at the empty net with, you know, over a minute from any time over a minute, you got to take the shot to kill the game. But a little bit of calm, you know, common ground and making sure that you have a lane to get it out there. We can easily kill that extra 10 seconds.
Sabres had the puck on their stick five times in the final 2 minutes, yep, and were unable to get that empty net goal. Colorado scores twice in the game with their goalie out, 6-on-5, pushing it to overtime, and that's where the Habs win this game, 6-5. With Marty, I'm Brian. It is Sabres Live on a Friday. Another heavy lift week, Marty. Are you exhausted from all of this?
I am very exhausted. I mean, what, do we not have a show Monday, not a show Wednesday? I mean, this is a three-show week. I'm tired.
I'm checking out till Tuesday. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Yeah.
the Amerks are back in action tonight, but the focus right now is the Sabres. And there, as there always are, many ways to look at it. You can't dispute the resiliency that the coach spoke of. You also can't deny the fact that they have gone 3-1-1 in the last five on the heels of the 13-game losing streak. Mm-hmm. But it is two losses in a row, and you aren't likely to win many games when you give up five or more.
Yeah.
No matter how your offense is going. So when the dust settles on all this, like, would you have wanted to have seen a more determined effort at the empty net in those five instances where they had the puck and could have made those, because two of them did come reasonably close,
yeah,
you know, but not like super close, but they looked like they were attempts to score. Well, a couple of the others were not, and you know, at the end of the day, they give up a goal with less than 8 seconds to go.
Yeah, Yeah, I felt like the attempt to score, like, you know, one of Darlene the Samuelson was not really the I'm going to shoot it hard to the net type of empty net attempt. Tuck was just, I'm turning around and I'm trying to just clear it out of the zone, which ended up in the corner. So, yeah, you look back and it's like 2020, you're like, take a hard shot, make a hard play. Like, if you're going to go for it, like, go. Not that flip or whatever. But I think they were caught in the between. In between, like, am I going for the net because I'm a little hesitant because it's Colorado and they've already scored a goal 6-on-5. And we know what happened the last time they were in Buffalo a month ago. And going for it. So I think the team got hesitant. Lindy Ruff talked about, you know, composure. Composure maybe with the puck in those moments. It's not the icing that is the issue. It's the maybe lack of authority with what you try to get that empty net goal. I'm going to go and, you know, so that's the composure that I think Lindy Ruff is talking about. And I look back again at that last goal. I think that right off the faceoff, the Sabres tried to put a ton of pressure. There was two block shots right away. But as soon as Colorado got full possession, it got a little bit all over the place with the three forwards because they ended up covering the three guys high in the zone when there's less than 10 seconds. And the most important guy was the guy that was in the middle of the ice and nobody was assuming that middle of the box position. I think he got running around, blocking shot, and nobody had the awareness of saying, I'm the center. I'm the low guy. I need to be in the middle of the ice. And that is why Jonathan Drouin was wide open. So again, a little composure there that was missing for the Sabres at the end of the game.
Is any of that in part to the fact that Makar had scored from distance on the previous 6-on-5?
Yes, but I always talk to you about game situation. The game situation is different with less than 10 seconds.
Exactly.
Like, you know, so Makar,
and they have
that
to
he
know
scored,
that, right?
Like Nathan MacKinnon is in the corner. He's not looking at the top. And if he was, then it's for Tuck and I would assume they started the face-off with Tuck and Malenstein as winger and Cousins was the center. Mm. Now, I got a little turnaround with Cousins blocking a shot, but still, like, that's Dylan's. I'm the center. I'm coming back to the middle. And you have to think, if the puck goes to the point, it's Tuck and Malenstein's, like, job to get in the shot lane. But the game situation changes. I always talk about end of period, end of game, at the end of a power play, know what plays you can't make. Overtime, what plays you can make, at what moment you can make it. Right? Like Lindy talked about turning the puck over in overtime.
I'm glad you got there. I mean, it was inevitable we would eventually. But yeah, like, I don't think this is on one guy. I really don't. Like, I realized that Tage had the puck, and Taves ends up being the player who strips him of the puck and takes the breakaway. But, like, I look at Cousins and Power on the ice, and I'm not sure that they would feel great about how everything unfolded. Again, easy to say from back here, or easy to even wonder, you know, what was going on. But I'd love to know what you saw of the play. Once, you know, it was very briefly a 2-on-1 with Thompson and Cousins. Then it became a 2-on-2, and then it became a 1-on-1 or over at the boards where Taves won the battle.
So 3-on-3, it's always three individual 1-on-1s, right? That's basically what it is. You have your guy, and that's your responsibility. Usually you play man-on-man, 3-on-3 all over the ice. So I watched that play again. And the way that it was set up is Dahlin went to the bench for a change. And when Power jumps off the bench, Tage Thompson has full possession of the puck on the half wall. He has full possession. And Power's thinking, if I beat my man, which is Nathan MacKinnon, I'm going to get an opportunity. Because Cousins was with Drouin and was peeling off, right? The middle of the ice is wide open. And Power, looking at the place, says, I'm going to jump. And at the end of the day, I'm not putting it all, the loss is not on Tage Thompson. But on that play, you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, 1-on-1, Power, MacKinnon, 1-on-1, Drouin, Cousins, 1-on-1, Thompson, Devontaes. The 1-on-1 was lost, and it ended up being on 1-on-0. That's really what it came down to. So could Cousins and Power have thought, oh, I'm going to play defensive hockey here? They could have. Would it have been the brand that Lindy Ruff wants them to go in overtime? No, you don't play safe.
Well, clearly on Lindy's comment, yes, he would have wanted that.
I think the comment was on Tage. I think the comment was on Tage. He's at the end of the
what
shift.
What option did Tage have once he was facing the boards? Power gave him no option. He went towards the net. The normal play in that situation when a forward's in a tough spot is retreat back to the neutral zone. We see it all the time.
Yeah, well, when Tage, before that, when he realized the 2-on-1 is done, maybe right there you give it to Power, or maybe you send it all the way back to your zone. Yeah. And you say, you know what, I'm going to not waste an opportunity here, and I'm going to send it back. And we're going to retain possession. And again, like, there's many different things that could happen on that play. When I look at it, I see one thing. When you look at it, you see a different thing. Lindy may have that discussion with the coaching staff and say, okay, what do we all see here as a coaching staff? And there's probably different opinions on it. I think in 3-on-3, in that situation, you almost get a 2-on-1. It's not there. Your mindset now as the puck carrier has to change as to, do I take a chance or do I make a conscious effort to say, okay, we're retaining possession and I'm going to get a change. I think that's where Lindy was kind of leaning on. And when I look back at it, I'm like, I can see what Power's trying to do, trying to create an offensive play.
Oh, I can see that. Work. Yeah, we can all see that for sure. Yeah. I'm just not sure.
And at the end, it's not Power's guy was MacKinnon. It's not MacKinnon that scores, and it's not Drouin who was with Cousins. Devontaes that got the puck out of Thompson.
Let's show it again for our MSG audience. I'm really curious about this since we're trying to talk it through from a player/goalie/perhaps coaching situation. I'm not saying he could have saved the day. And again, it's easy to sit here and wonder. But when you look at the wide side, like once Thompson is going towards the boards, Would you want Cousins to think of a more defensive posture at that point? If he's seeing power eventually come down the middle, like Dylan ends up stopping on the left wing. He's flat-footed while this is going on, right? He's waiting, he's waiting, he's waiting, he's looking, and then it's gone, right? Now, again, could he have closed the gap? Probably not, but I'm just curious. I'm openly asking you, like, what you would want to see in this situation. And again, there's so much ice to cover when it's 3-on-3. It looks worse, obviously, than it probably is in the moment.
I watch it again, first of all, and I'm like, oh, I would have loved Tage to take it down the wing. Like, make a hard play down the wing, like Rick Nash style back in the days, right? Like, make the hard play down the wing. Like, you know what? You can kind of read it's going to be a 2-on-2 now. Mm-hmm. And going to the middle late in your shift, you're obviously opening some can of worms that could happen. And it happened. So that's one. 5-on-5, Duffer, I would agree with you 100%. I would think 5-on-5, Dylan Cousins can't really just stay there and think, okay, is that puck going to come towards us or whatnot? Mm-hmm. But 3-on-3, he's looking back and he's like, my guy is 15 feet below me. Right. I'll recover. I'll recover. Yeah. I'll beat him back to the front of the net. You know, Jonathan Drouin is not a threat. I'm okay. And if we get possession, then maybe I can allow Tage to go for a change. Power just changed. Like, Darling just changed. Like, I can... So 5-on-5, 100%, always think of get on the defensive side. 3-on-3, man-on-man, it's, I hate to say it, that's an old, like, Donald Odette cliche. I had my guy. Like, but 3-on-3 in overtime is that. It's, I had my guy. Like, who lost the battle?
I appreciate you walking us through, you know, what it looks like, what it actually is when it's 3-on-3, how it compares to 5-on-5 in responsibility. And let's not forget what Lindy's post-game comments were after the Dallas game.
We played too safe.
We play a little too safe.
Yeah.
Okay. This is, you know, and you have to try. And so it's sports. There's a winner and there's a loser. There's a play that comes from usually a negative play, right? And this is, would they have been there if Thompson doesn't have three assists?
Nope.
Probably not. I don't know. But it's frustrating when they get five goals. But I could circle it all the way back to what we've seen now, maybe three straight games, and certainly at other times in the losing streak. Especially on a night when they tweaked all the lines again, we didn't know what to expect, three out of the four lines. Shot attempts are awfully low.
Yep.
Like, awfully, like, great shooting percentage last night. Phenomenal shooting percentage. But I feel like this, to put yourself in the situations to actually put many of these games away, especially the ones with the multi-goal leads, we've seen four of them, I think, in the last 15 disappear. You got to have those extended zone time and shot attempt sequences, right? And so I'm not sure when you only had, what, 37 shot attempts last night? That's less than 30 against St. Louis.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just curious how you see it, because I felt like you were almost a little surprised that Lindy decided to change the lines after having gone 3-1 in the previous four games, you know, but based on what we're talking about, which is the lack of shot attempts, you can understand why he would want to consider doing that, right?
Yes. I think that they had won the game in St. Louis in a game that they probably felt, we got away with one here with the amount of shot attempts and scoring chances St. Louis got. And then they lose to Dallas. So you're probably shaking it up. I was surprised because on the surface, it's like you're 3-1 in the last four. And, you know, you're getting some results. And, you know, you scored a lot of goals. The Islanders game, the Chicago game, scored a lot of goals. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I can see, number one, with Tage not taking face-offs in the game against Dallas and taking only one in the game last night against Colorado, how maybe that started the change. Okay, we're going to put Tage on the wing. Now, who are our four centers? Mm-hmm. Well, when you look at the four centers, now you got to change your whole lines because it's Cousins, Kulik, Krebs, and McLeod. So that all changed there. I understand that part. And I think that Tage got three assists and Jason Zucker's got three goals and an assist. And, you know, they're playing a top line with Cousins. And you're like, okay, that's pretty good. My only thing, and I look at the game and I say, yeah, they responded. They give up a goal to make it 3-2. They get back 4-2. They give up a 4-3 goal. They get back 5-3. That was the response you want to see. But at 3-0, just a few minutes past the halfway mark in the game, they scored their second power play goal. If you look at the expected goals, and if you look on many different, you know, platform, but I'm looking at Sports Logic in front of me.
You should look at the chat function.
What's that?
You should look at the chat function, most importantly. We have a guest rating.
Yes, okay. But I'll tell you this. The Sabres were at 3.2 expected goals halfway into the game. They finished the game at 3.5. In the second half of the game in overtime, they had a 0.3 expected goals. And they had a power play at 4-3 that went to nowhere, and then they gave up at 5-3, I should say, and then they gave up, you know, all the goals after that.
Yes, Blackwood faced three shots, right?
Yep.
So that lines up with the numbers you're talking about.
Yes.
All right. We're encouraging you to come join us on Monday night at the arena. Washington's in town. The chase for the all-time goal-scoring crown for Alex Ovechkin continues, and it's a black and red night. All you got to do is purchase your black and red T-shirt ticket pack. You can arrive in style for this one. And again, it's Monday, January the 6th. Head to sabres.com/black and red to purchase yours today. Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, TSN. He's with us here on Sabres Live. The question is, will Darren be hosting, moderating, the next Hockey Canada Summit to figure out what's wrong with the great game up north? Hi, Darren.
Oh, not sure that Drex is hearing us.
Wasted lead-in.
Yeah, he didn't hear my nice long speech when we were waiting for him. So, yeah, I think he's may have to go back to him, Jeff.
No, there he is.
There he is.
Operator error. I was about to send a scathing text to Jeff to say, look, and I can't hear anything. I can see you guys and you bring me up. What is this, amateur? No, you know
that's amateur hour.
Yeah. No, it is not. On my end, it is. I didn't have my earpiece entirely plugged in. So,
Can I tell you what Dregs, what Duffer introduced you with? He wanted to see if you're going to moderate the next Hockey Canada Summit after last night Team Canada game against Czechia.
Well, might be a little premature for that, and I know it's all in jest. But let's
wait till Finland wins the Four Nations.
Well, that's exactly right. Let's see what happens with the Four Nations face-off. And then this summit you speak of, Duffer, could actually come into reality. But, you know, this is what we do, right? I mean, it's no different in the U.S. I mean, the American team is absolutely, oh, boy, I'm just hitting all the buttons today for you guys.
Yeah, you're good.
The American team is positioned well to defend gold, but if things don't go well against Czechia, then there's going to be disappointment. There's going to be tough questions. There's going to be some sort of aftermath, post-mortem, all of that. It's just Canada has the ugly history of losing to Czechia in the quarterfinals last year and now again here and finishing fifth. And then you compile and you pile on that with the number of top NHL drafted guys that weren't included. And some weren't even invited to make this roster. Heavily Eastern based. So now all my pals from out west are like, just have a look at this roster. That's what I have to deal with given my junior hockey roots. But hey, Czechia was good. Canada wasn't good enough. And the Americans look like they're loaded and ready.
Yeah, they definitely, look good. And this is World Juniors. We talked enough about it. We've got, funny enough, we didn't have any Sabres prospect on Team Canada. We have him on Finland, on Slovakia, on Sweden, on Finland, but Slovakia is out.
And so, the U.S.
And the U.S., you're right. There's a couple in the U.S. Okay, last night in the Sabres game, there was a play where Benson got pushed into Scott Wedgwood. It caused an injury. Jared Bednar wasn't happy about it because he said, well, my goalie's clearly hurt. Like, he probably should blow the whistle. We've seen that happen. I understand the rule on that. There was a similar situation against Florida where Bobrovsky was interfered in, and then they allowed the goal because they said, you know what, like Matthew Tkachuk was holding the guy in there. So is this one of those with goalie injuries we have to maybe be more sensitive, because it clearly was an injury on the play and it wasn't a bang-bang play where, you know, the league may look at making some adjustments there?
Well, for me, if you're asking my opinion, I would say yes, absolutely. The league has to be more sensitive. But here's what I know, and there's another general manager's meeting coming up in March, as you guys know, and that's the one where if you're going to tweak something like this, or you don't even have to tweak it, you can redefine just the language of how the rule is written, and you can be more specific to a goaltender, as an example. So that could be a takeaway, or at least Colin Campbell and Stephen Watkin was the head of officiating. The player's safety department, they can put that on the radar of the general managers, toss it around that room in their breakout groups, bring it back, full discussion. All right, let's push forward with a recommendation that goes to the competition committee and then has to be ultimately voted on by the Board of Governors before it becomes reality next year. I think things like this are what makes that March meeting so interesting, to be fair. Now, look, if this were happening every other game, it's happened a few times, no doubt about it. But if it were happening on a regular basis, then I think there'd be a higher level of urgency to it. But I do want to give hockey operations of the NHL and the officiating department credit for how they deal with things after they happen. You know, hockey fans may not appreciate this because, you know, things can move at a snail's pace on an annual basis, but something like that, they would take seriously. And Jared Bednar's a respectful guy. You know, he was as hot as he's probably going to get. Yeah, he dropped a couple of curse words in there, no big deal. But I thought he was excellent in explaining what his concern was and then making the comparisons to other situations. So I did reach out to Coley Campbell, the head of hockey operations. I haven't heard back yet, but I'm confident in saying that they will talk about some sort of a tweak moving forward.
Well, we saw it in the Sabres game earlier this year when the Sabre defenseman hoisted Carconi into Lukanen. He was down. Shot came from the point from Sergachev and scored in similar fashion into an basically uncontested goal.
Yep.
And then there was, as Marty said, the Carolina-Florida last night, which was kind of funny. Like, Kotkaniemi is sliding into Bobrovsky, which clearly, you know, renders him unable to make a save in that moment. Now, he didn't need to in that particular moment, but Chuck didn't let Kotkaniemi up, and then Bob was wanting a whistle, and it was just kind of a disbelief moment, like, from the Florida Panthers standpoint. But the irony, or whatever, you would almost expect that if something like this is happening, Tkachuk is going to be involved, right?
Absolutely.
And he's just like pinning him down. I don't know. It was a bizarre sequence, obviously, and Carolina ended up winning the game.
Well, and just to interject there a little bit, Duffer, like, I think that's the maturity of the player and maybe coaching as well, right? Because we used to see Matthew do this all the time. Now, he still does it, but he does it less frequently than he used to. And you know, by extension, he stays on the ice more because he has been tagged for this in the past. And his younger brother, Brady, not dissimilar. So I think Paul Maurice coming in and saying, look, Bed, you're too good of a hockey player, Matthew, to do this kind of stuff. So we've got to fine tune it. Like, we don't want to take that crease game away from you and the shenanigans that goes along with the scrums and all of that. Yeah. You just have to tighten it up. And I know that they've done that with Brady in Ottawa as well.
But Marty, as a goalie and seeing that incidental contact from Kotkaniemi that clearly affects the play.
Yeah.
Like, how do you feel about that?
You know what's funny is that I think Bob is smart, and Bob was trying to sell it because Bob did a Roberto Luongo and kept his eyes off the play for a little bit, because Bob actually made a save before, and then the puck rebounded to the right, and he looked over to Kotkaniemi and Tkachuk, and by the time he recovered, he's like, oh, I forgot the play's still going on, and then he didn't get back to the puck. So I think he was trying to sell it, and that's just, to me, as a goalie, I'm like, got to be better. You got to play the game, right? And that's different than Wedgwood, but Wedgwood was hurt. He's like potentially going to be long-term. So you're like, okay, well, that's the problem here. Another situation, Dregs, that has come up now more often this year is that reverse hit. Max Domi yesterday on Isaiah George in the Toronto Islanders game. Reverse hit. Like, Domi has the puck. Isaiah George has come in to play on him, make a play on him, and then he lets the puck go to reverse it, Isaiah George, and catch him pretty high. Is the league going to start looking more at those? Because we've seen it happen more often.
Yeah, and they have to is the answer I'm going to go with. But I have asked about this repeatedly, and I don't know that it's glaring, but we do see it, right? And players have gotten pretty good at delivering that reverse hit. Now, there's a difference, in my opinion. You're entitled to protect the puck. You're entitled to that area of space if you're making a play on the puck. And you can feel like that defending player is coming in hard after you, whatever. You're expecting a hit. You're expecting the puck battle. So what's your response? Well, your response is to drop back and lay that shoulder. But this was clearly premeditated by Max. Now, had he been thinking about it for a minute? Of course not. In the moment, he turned, he saw George coming, boom, he gets his elbow up and tags him.
Penalty, and it leads to a goal. Whereas here in Buffalo this year, Jason Zucker, on a far less egregious play, was penalized, and there was disbelief in the building.
Right.
So, yeah.
See, that's where it gets tricky, though, is the consistency factor. And I'm not one who likes to pile on the officiating, because they are held accountable. I mentioned Stephen Walkham earlier. Every single game that is played, there's an assessment, and then there's a report sent out of how that game looked from an officiating standpoint. So if you miss a call like that, and I'd be curious, I mean, Walkham's probably not going to share what his view of that, the Domi play last night, but I do think, because it happens so often now and players have gotten so good at delivering it, that the league is going to have to, if not address it, certainly have the conversation, like I suggested earlier, about a danger play when a player appears to be injured and you don't whistle the play dead. I mean, those are incidents and examples that the National Hockey League has to look at from a player safety perspective.
Elias Pettersson, what's his status and future?
Well, his status, at least short term, is that he's not going to miss too much time. So that's good news. He was listed as day-to-day. Longer term, guys, this one just, it has that feel to it, doesn't it? Now, he needs to come back from injury. I don't know if you caught the Vancouver-Calgary game on New Year's Eve or portions of it. JT Miller in that game was lights out good. I mean, if JT Miller can play that brand of hockey the rest of the way, then the Vancouver Canucks are in good shape, with or without Elias Pettersson and what he's doing, because that's what they need. But what they really need is Pettersson coming back and being more well-rounded in what he is. We know that he's got a high level of skill, but when he's not delivering on that skill, he's not giving you much of anything, right? And he's so stubborn that it doesn't appear that he's willing to work at getting better in the other areas of weakness. So I do get a feel, and I haven't heard this directly from management of Vancouver, so I want to be very clear on that. I do get a feel that they've grown weary of all of it. And that includes, the nonsense of a rift between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. So I think that they're most definitely open a conversation on Pettersson, but what does that look like? What does a deal like that look like? Because when you look at that contract, what general manager in the National Hockey League is making that deal and giving up top players and getting back what you currently see in Elias Pettersson? Not many, right? Not many. So it he's got some time to play his way out of the rumor mill or deeper into it when he gets back here healthy.
Happy New Year, bud. Player. Thanks for being with us here on Sabres Live.
And, Happy New Year, guys.
Yeah, we'll see you soon. We'll continue our Friday edition of Sabres Live with Shana Goldman from The Athletic next.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
For the first time in 2025, we say hello, Shayna Goldman from The Athletic, and Happy New Year. How are you?
I'm great now that I'm here. I mean, my year is officially made.
Ah, well, now the hard questions. Should Buffalo be pursuing? Should anybody be pursuing? This is how we left the conversation with Darren Dreger. Elias Pettersson of Vancouver, like, what's his value right now? And should somebody be really knocking on the door in Vancouver to pry him out of there? No?
No, no one should want him because, you know, he doesn't care. Right.
Oh, okay. You're starting the year with some sarcasm. I was like, oh my gosh. I kept saying yesterday, yes, yes, yes. And now Shayna's knocking me down. What's going on?
No, yes. They should, every single person, every team. And it's like, this is the funny thing. Whenever you hear a player's name on the market, right? And I'm sure we've talked about this, there are those like levels of interest, right? It's like, is a team kicking the tires? Are they actually pursuing them? When a player like Elias Pettersson is available, you should be kicking the tires. If a player like Elias Pettersson is not on the market, kick the tires in the off chance you can get this home run trade, right? He's such a good player, and I know he's been a little bit inconsistent, right? We all thought he was hurt in the postseason last year, and then when Tocchet stressed that he wasn't, it's like, okay, what's the deal then? Where is your shot? Where are your passes? But I think he has true star power. He's a true first-line center. Teams pay a lot of money to have iffy and mid-third-line centers at the deadline. If you can get a real 1C, you should be jumping at it, even with contract.
Okay, when you look at NHL Edge stats, and that's available for everybody, his burst of speeds, right? They look at burst over 22 miles an hour, 20 miles an hour, top speed and all that. It has dropped off a lot in the last 2 years. Is it, you talked about Rick Tocchet, like, is it Rick Tocchet's system that has slowed down Elias Pettersson, or is it Elias Pettersson, who's only 26? He can't have slowed down physically. Like, is this a systematic issue or a coach issue with Pettersson?
Yeah, I wonder if it is, because it's not like he's had slow line mates either, right? Like last year he had Ilya Mikheyev, who should have never been a top liner for all of the reasons, but had the speed to keep up, right? And Jake DeBrusk brings some speed and some energy off the rush. So I would think it's either systems or maybe his workload. I feel like he focuses a lot on the defense, and that's a great thing to have, right? In a perfect world, every center is a good two-way player and is a good defensive player. And I know every coach wants to see that. But I do wonder sometimes if there's too much emphasis on his defense that maybe is slowing him down a little bit, because we see as the defense gets better, sometimes it's weighing on his offense.
I do think there were times last year where he had less than elite line mates, and it really did drag him down. And Mikheyev was not whatever Mikheyev once was. And he only recently with Chicago did he say that he actually got back to full speed based on having the previous knee injury. So these are things that, you know, whether it's splitting hairs, whatever, clearly Pettersson was not what he was before, but I also don't think he was in a great situation last year. This year, who knows? I mean, it just seems like it's a strange year in Vancouver for any number of reasons. And now Marty Demko, you know, gets dinged up again last night. Lankinen comes in. JT Miller emerges as the hero in the shootout. Like, it's, man, it's like a drama that was written by you, Shayna.
I know. I love it. Oh, my God. I could eat this up every day. Give me all the Canucks drama. It's like the perfect organization to have the drama to. Like, I feel like these Canadian franchises like Vancouver, Toronto, and Edmonton amp it up to a level that I absolutely love. And the drama never stops giving in Vancouver right now. The situation, you know, the press conferences for Pettersson and Miller, and then all the rumors coming out, it's too much. The Demko situation is the one part I don't want to see, right? Like, I don't want to see the best players injured, because I think it's such a great story. He's been back. He's been really good. And I think that was going to work out for him and Lankinen. I think Lankinen, you know, his last couple games hasn't been as strong. He's been solid. He gave his team, I think he's had two quality starts in his last three games, but he doesn't have wins. But I think the more he starts, the better rhythm he's going to get into. But I understand why they were leaning on Demko a little bit more. But it felt like they had the pieces to really build on last season, and it just hasn't happened. And some of it's bad luck, and then some of it's their own making, because they can't get out of their own way with the drama.
Alex Ovechkin is at 871. We joked the other day, well, Duffer did, and I supported the joke, that Alexei Protas should be suspended and fined for scoring an empty net goal and not looking for Ovechkin while on the ice to give him a no, but he doesn't need him. He's at 871. He's 24 goals away from passing Wayne Gretzky. He's on pace to do it in February. Does he do it this year? And how amazing is his return, knowing that he keeps scoring after having that broken leg?
Yeah, this is why Protas and Ovechkin are separated, because they're like, we can't have you on the same line if you're not going to set him up for those empty netters. But no,
was the suspension. You can't play with him.
Yeah, sorry, go to the second line. Although that second line is completely crushing it. Like, Pierre-Luc Dubois, the glow up in Washington is real. But what Ovechkin's doing is incredible, because when we looked at the early goings of the season, it was like, is he going to hit the record? It would probably be early next season, not this year, because it wasn't the same as like last season start, right? Which was as cold as it comes. But you looked at it and you were like, well, the shooting is down a little bit. The shot quality is down a little bit. He doesn't have a lot of shooting luck. It just isn't perfectly working. And then all of a sudden it started clicking, right? And the Capitals hit their stride and he was killing it. And he's killing it at 5-on-5, because the power play before he got hurt was a little bit inconsistent. They found their groove a little bit after, with Jacob Chychrun stepping up to shoot the puck a bit more. But I mean, everything and more is happening when he's on the ice, and you're seeing him be a good player 5-on-5, a little uncharacteristic. You're seeing Dylan Strome show what a true 1C he is and setting him up a lot. And I think it's all just working. Like, are there some kinks to work out in Washington now that he's healthy, especially with all the other lines outside of the second? Yes, but it does feel like he is going to hit that record this year the way he's scoring. It is so unbelievable that he just has picked up where he left off. And yes, it starts with an empty net goal. And yes, last night's a power play goal. But those goals matter too, right? They all kind of like fill into that same big picture, even if they're not as impressive as, I don't know, scoring all of them at 5-on-5.
Allow me to play the role of idiot. I will say he will not break the record this year. This is the same idiot who hung his hat on Georgiev not too long ago.
Yeah.
But the good news is it has opened the door for Askarov to play more in San Jose, and we are all here for that, including his impressive win over Tampa last night.
So. And what a game that was. The late games last night seriously brought it. I mean, we had so much action. You see Seattle's comeback win. You see the Sharks taking it to Tampa Bay. Obviously, they lose Victor Hedman. That's a huge loss right there. But the Sharks are so impressive, because I know they were losing games, and you're going, but look at Celebrini and look at what he's doing. But if you can have some reliable goaltending in there, and Askarov proves he can play more, game changer.
Yeah.
Six out of five goals. Like, we saw two against the Sabres last night. We're seeing quite a bit around the NHL. Is there a secret sauce to 6-on-5 and being able to have those opportunities now that teams are coming back, scoring late goals, and then, you know, taking it to overtime?
Well, I know a lot of teams around the league have been pulling their goalies earlier for years now. So I would imagine if you're a team, knowing that's the trend, you're going to try to practice 6-on-5s more, because you know that you're going to be playing it for more than a minute, right? And I think we've seen some teams like Minnesota, what was it, two seasons ago? They were so incredible in 6-on-5 situations. They had so many comeback wins because of it. If you see other teams having success, you should have it. It is kind of interesting, though, because teams kind of have their units, and that's what they practice with. And you're seeing teams like, I don't know, the New York Rangers, where they're, you know, they're leaning on their younger players throughout much of the third period. And then the 6-on-5 comes around and they're like, we're going to put Zibanejad and Kreider back on the ice, because that's who generally practices it, not the guys like Hedl who helped get them to that point. So I wonder if teams are going to start learning from that as well, to try to get more players included in these practices, right? Because we're seeing more goalie pulls, more comeback wins. So maybe you need it that more players are ready to play in those situations. Like, I don't know. I wonder where it goes from here.
The Islanders were basically just content to play as close to 500 as possible until they got healthy. Now they're healthy and they've gone 2-6 with a healthy lineup. And Patrick Waugh says that he has no video evidence to support his claim, but they are playing well.
Yes.
Brock Nelson has disappeared since just before the Four Nations announcement. No goals in over a month. What is happening, and what may happen on the island, or will nothing happen and it'll just remain the island?
Nothing will happen, because that is the Islander way, right? Like, that is what it is.
Think of what Brock Nelson could have fetched last year at the deadline when he was posting another 30 goal season. And now what? He's just going to walk into UFA on a down year?
And here's the thing. If you were to trade him this year, you would get a killing for him, because there are teams out there that want centers. Toronto needs a center. I could see a lot of teams going out for, look how much teams got for just okay centers last season, right? If Sean Monahan and Elias Lindholm in a down year and Adam Henrique are pulling in huge returns, what's someone actually good like Brock Nelson, who comes to play in the postseason, worth? Like, it would be so interesting if he were available, but Will he be? I mean, I understand the want to stay in the mix if you're the Islanders, because you bet on this core to win right now, so you want to stick with that. And also, a lot of the Eastern Conference doesn't want that last wild card seed, so maybe you have a shot. But it reminds me of, it was two seasons ago, when you had guys like Mayfield they could have traded, and they probably could have gotten a lot for him because he was a cheap right-handed defenseman. They opted against it. They could have moved Zach Parise. They opted against it. They could have moved Varlamov. They opted against it. And they just started re-signing guys for more of the same. Like, that's the Islander way, when that was the prime opportunity to step back, kind of retool, right? Get some assets, flip them, go in the offseason and do that, and then push forward. Look at what the Capitals did a couple years ago. Like, look at how it's working out. And they just won't do it. It's the Lou Lamoriello way. If they go for anyone, I don't think they're going to sell. They're going to somehow buy. And they're going to buy someone that's been on a Lou Lamoriello team before, because that is what they do.
Let me ask you about goaltending and the Philadelphia Flyers, because they had, signed Fedotov and is hurt, but it really hasn't worked good. And then this other kid came over this year, right, Kolosov, and you're like, oh, what is he like? And wasn't really good last night. Ersson has always seemed hurt. Are the Flyers a team to look for maybe a goalie movement at some point? And I'm saying this year or even into the offseason, because we saw some goalie movement already this season, and we started seeing it last summer. So you think the Flyers would be in the market for that?
I'm not sure if they're going to be, because, like, we don't see goalie movement enough. Obviously, this year we've had a couple of trades. After, like, last year we were waiting for them all season, they didn't happen. But they committed to their goalies that they have. They added another one into the mix. That I wonder if they just know this is the vision, this is the process, just focus on it. And if you have to make a decision in the offseason, you do it. But let everyone develop and then figure it out instead of spending now. Obviously, having a good goalie can solidify a lot of things, right? And it can keep you in games maybe you don't belong to be in. And yes, that'll earn you extra points, which doesn't help if you're rebuilding, I guess. But, you know, it helps build that competitive environment. So I see why they should go for it, but I just don't think they're going to yet.
Which team is the next to make a big move, in your opinion?
I feel like I'm waiting. I'm still waiting for someone like Dallas to make a move, because that second line, I know that White Johnson and Matt,
it's good now
together, but yeah. I'm a little bit worried if they're going to be enough to kind of power that top nine when the first line is not scoring at the capacity they need. And I don't think the Danoff is the answer there.
Yeah, well, they are. At the very least, in the last week, they've turned a corner. They look an awful lot better. But
does the Donoff still have a no trade clause? That's what
only to Anaheim. Only to Anaheim.
Only to Anaheim. Okay.
And obviously, there's some pretty significant depth there. Shayna, thank you. Enjoy the early action here in 2025, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks for having me,
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. We'll wrap up Sabres Live after this.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Goalies were central to a lot of storylines in the NHL last night. Marty's longtime favorite, John Gibson, found himself in overtime about a minute and a half in and sensing imminent doom. So he, my words, intentionally knocked the net off. Yep. There was disbelief in the arena in Winnipeg when this went unpenalized. Well, wouldn't you know it, John Gibson ends up with the primary assist on the Troy Terry overtime winner that followed not long after. Marty, how intentional was this on Gibson's part?
I'm going to say 50-50. I'm going to say he knew that he was going into the post hard, but the post should hold up. Like, that's the problem. And his reaction is almost like, again, like, you know, people, coach, parents that watch youth hockey and they see the goalie like hitting the net in the reverse VH. And once the net gets knocked off once or twice, it happens too easily. And the goalie's always like, come on. Like, I'm not trying to do it, but it happens. I think that was John Gibson's reaction. And then just to prove the point that the net was coming off too easy, Cole Perfetti ran into the net. The net came off really easy, but they let the play run. And Anaheim scores on the 2-on-1. So I'm saying it was 50-50 on Gibson.
Hockey is so hard to explain to people that are seeing it for the first time or two in their life.
Oh my gosh, it's the worst. It's the worst.
Just disbelief in hockey mad Winnipeg last night.
Imagine when there was two line passes. I know. Explain that.
We'd be doing this an awful lot more. Sabres, Golden Knights tomorrow. We'll see you then on MSG. Enjoy the weekend, folks.